I'm Erin.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Megan.
And this is the Tribbles and Transporters podcast.
You could write about something in science fiction, so I dreamed up the Star Trek idea so that I could comment on man and society.
The whole show was an attempt to say that humanity will reach maturity and wisdom on the day that it begins not just to tolerate, but to take a special delight in differences in ideas and differences in life forms.
You know the greatest danger facing us is ourselves, an irrational fear of the unknown. There's no such thing as the unknown. Only things temporarily hidden, temporarily not understood.
Open your mind to the past. Art, history, philosophy, and all this may mean something.
There comes a time in every man's life when he must stop thinking and start doing.
Fear only exists for one purpose, to be conquered.
We're going to stumble, make mistakes, I'm sure more than a few before we find our footing. But we're going to learn from those mistakes. That's what being human is all about.
The heart of real science fiction is stories about people and ideas. Because it says it's not all over, it's not going to go up in smoke, we're going to make it. Because it says the human adventure has just begun.
Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of Tribbles and Transporters. This is the podcast with your three Trekkie gals who grew up in the 90s and fell in love with Star Trek for many of the reasons that you just heard. And even though we consider ourselves Trekkies, there's a lot of Star Trek out there that we've never seen before. So we've been cycling through the episodes of all the completed series, learning some cool behind-the-scenes stuff, and talking about our reactions to each episode. We also tackle different topics within the Star Trek universe and do interviews with occasional guests. Today's episode, we are going to be talking about the pilot of Strange New Worlds. But if you're listening for the first time, we want to let you know very quickly who we are. My name is Erin. I am the Voyager fan on the podcast. And so that is my favorite series. Janeway is my favorite character. I've been watching Star Trek since I was a kid and started out with Next Generation. So I've seen all of Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. And just a little bit of the original series, but all that I've seen of Enterprise or any of the newer Star Treks really is what we've been doing for the podcast.
I am Sarah. I am the TNG fan. We're all fans of TNG, but yeah, that's my favorite show of Star Trek. Yeah, it's also the only show that I've seen all of the episodes of. I haven't seen parts of the other series. I've seen bits and pieces of them, some seasons, a few episodes here or there. So I'm watching a lot of that stuff for the first time.
And my name is Megan, and I am the resident Deep Space Nine super fan of the show. But I've, like Sarah said, I grew up watching Next Generation. I love that show as well. I've seen all of Voyager. I have seen all of Deep Space Nine, obviously. I have seen the first two seasons of Enterprise. I don't think I've seen as much of the original series as I think I have. And then, so that's out of the completed series that I've watched, and I've actually delved a little bit into the new stuff, which we'll talk about later.
All right. So we're going to let you know really quickly what to expect during our episode of this podcast. We are going to do something slightly different today. We're going to have more of a casual conversation than we normally do. We're still going to, you know, do a lot of the same things that we usually do, but we're going to skip the music challenge tonight or today. I don't know. Whenever you're listening to this.
That's always complicated.
Yeah.
How does time work?
Exactly. But we're going to skip the music challenge and the quiz today, and we're going to kind of replace them with some additional discussion about some of the more recent Trek shows. And we're going to do our little recap of the episode of this episode of Strange New Worlds. So if you haven't seen it yet, I don't know why you would listen to our podcast if you haven't seen it yet, but
but if you haven't seen it, stop and go watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're just going to do a very quick synopsis of the episode, just to refresh your memory on what it was about. And then we'll do our little What Did You Think segment. We'll do some behind the scenes discussion, maybe not quite as much as we normally do. And then we'll get into the episode discussion of Strange New Worlds. And we probably will wrap things up by just touching really briefly on some of the more recent shows, because we've been doing the older shows on this podcast, and we haven't really touched on the new stuff that much yet. So I think it would be fun if we just, had a little bit of time devoted to that towards the end of the episode today. And then we'll get to your listener feedback after that.
When one of Pike's officers goes missing while on a secret mission for Starfleet, Pike has to come out of self-imposed exile. He must navigate how to rescue his officer while struggling with what to do with the vision of the future he's been given. So, what did you guys think?
Well, what do you think?
What do you think?
What do you think?
I have to say, I really enjoyed this episode. I have not seen the season of Discovery with Captain Pike and this crew. So I was the person coming into this without knowing exactly what happened. I mean, I knew he had interaction with the crew of Discovery and all of that sort of thing. But to see the way they wove that in so that you did kind of get a bit of what he went through and why he's so hesitant to come back, I thought that worked very well. And then just the overarching plot of the episode itself, I thought was a great introduction to this new crew and the format of the show going forward.
Well, I had heard all the buzz of this show leading up to this, and I spoiled myself by reading a lot of the reviews because it's been out a few days prior to me watching this. And so there were a lot of reviews already online of the show, and I had not read a negative one so far. I mean, everybody seemed to really love it. So I had high expectations going into this. A lot of people said that it felt more like traditional Trek, which it absolutely did. And I love that about the show. I thought I had a good time watching it, and it does bring back that kind of more, I hesitate to say nostalgic. It's updated, but it's nostalgic at the same time. It's an interesting mix of the two. I don't know. I look forward to seeing, you know, where they go with it for the rest of the season.
And for me, I did actually sit down and watch all of Discovery after the teaser trailer for Strange New World came out, because I wanted to, knowing that Captain Pike had been on that, I wanted to see what this was. And so I watched all of Discovery. And so from that, I loved season 2 of Discovery. So I was so excited after watching this and anticipating Strange New Worlds coming out. And I loved this. Like, I agree with Sarah. It does harken back to more of having a classic Trek feel. I loved all of the characters on this. I loved the look of the sets and the props and all that stuff. So I just had a blast watching this episode.
All right, guys, we're going to try a picture on this. Let's get everybody one, please.
Pictures up.
Pictures up.
Let's roll sound.
Rolling.
Rolling.
Sound speed.
Camera speed. Take 2. Mark.
And action.
So we gave you our quick takes on what we thought about this. We'll be getting into the larger discussion about the episode coming up here shortly. We did want to, before we get into that, talk a little bit about the production behind the scenes. And I don't have a ton of like technical stuff on this. Megan's got a lot of the production behind the scenes stuff, because I think she's done a little bit more research into this than Aaron and I have. But it's just as far as like the director goes, Akiva Goldsman directed this, and he has worked on Picard, and is it Picard in this show? I think it's Picard.
He's the showrunner for this, I think.
Is he a showrunner?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, I thought Alex Kurtzman was. Okay.
I think they both are.
They both are, okay. I was trying to remember if he was on... Yeah, he did Discovery, too. I couldn't remember if he also did Discovery, so... Yeah, so basically, he and Alex Kurtzman are the two head honchos, I guess, these days. And really, pretty much everybody on the writing staff as well... which is just three people. it's Akiva, Alex, and Jenny Lumet. So all of them have done work on the various New Trek shows. They've not done any work on the older shows, which is what I was curious about. But they're kind of a slightly younger generation, so they wouldn't have, except for Alex... No, Akiva.
Akiva,
He would have been the only one old enough to maybe have worked on the older other shows. The other writers and producers were a little young for that, I think. And of course, Alex worked with, I guess, JJ, the movies as well.
Yeah.
So I, what I've gathered on the behind the scenes stuff is just really what I've watched from like the Ready Room that's on Paramount Plus and some of the articles and interviews that the actors have given. So I do know in this, there was sort of like 3D mapping on projection there. So like where Spock and T'Pring are on their date, that all of that background is video projection. So it's, for me, that harkened back to, because I'm also a Star Wars fan, with how The Mandalorian and Boba Fett were filmed using 3D projection. There's pictures of that posted out where they're got projector alignment going on. I think it was 8 projectors that were across that to make that background on that set. And talking about this episode on the Ready Room with Akiva, that he was talking about how when this pilot episode was filmed, that I actually filmed it in 2 parts because the sets themselves were not entirely finished at the time that filming started. So like half of this episode was filmed at the beginning of the season's filming, and then the other half was filmed at the end of the season.
Weird.
Really? the sets weren't finished. And so they were talking, he goes into more detail about talking about how they had to film around that they'd been in rooms that didn't have all the walls in, so they had to be careful how they were filming. So you didn't see all of that while that was being done. So I know that the cast has all talked about how they love filming on the bridge, because that's the only time the whole cast is together, because this was filmed during the height of COVID. So they loved having the bridge scenes where all of them were together and could interact with each other. So it's just not a whole bunch of behind the scenes stuff, but definitely some very interesting stuff out there on more of the official accounts and these actors' accounts. So
yeah, the bridge thing is interesting because the TNG crew says the same thing.
Yeah.
That their favorite filming days were the days on the bridge where they were all there.
Yeah.
So
one of the other things they were talking about when you mentioned the bridge, this triggered this thought. So Akiva was also talking about when all of the displays and the stations that these actors all sit at, if they have a computer terminal interface, like all of that is there in production, like in the filming. It's not all visuals that are added in post. And they've designed these interfaces that they all work on to actually like do things like to change the display and do all that stuff. He said, so they're actually interacting with this content that we're seeing.
Yeah.
Oh,
to get like genuine reactions and them just not tapping stuff that's not really doing anything. So, well, that's cool.
I'm sure that helps a lot when you're acting.
Yeah.
The projection stuff is also interesting to me, too, because I know that they've done that on the Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you think about, like, well, what's the advantage to that over green screening it? But I guess it's just way more, because you have to still use CGI either way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it does eliminate the problems that you have with green screen. And then you also have something for the actors to look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that would be, I think, kind of a nice improvement over the traditional green or blue screen that the other Star Trek cast had to deal with back in the day.
Yeah, it reminds me of a time my dad actually went to a conference at Disney World, and they had built for this conference what was at the time the longest continuous projection screen. And so it wrapped on the – it was, you know, in a conference room, like a big hotel kind of conference room, and it wrapped from like halfway – up one side wall all the way along the long side and halfway down the other wall. And it was just like one continuous projection, so they could have visuals like going around, almost around the room sort of thing. And it was really neat to see. So I wonder if it's kind of like that for these actors. And that's probably much more immersive than doing green screen.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. But you also have to have the CGI done way ahead of time.
Right.
You know, yeah. You don't have that post-production period where you can figure that out and add it in later. You've got to kind of think ahead with that a lot more. So it would change up the production sequence too. Mm.
They can probably tweak it afterwards, I'm sure.
Maybe. I don't know. I actually don't know how that works. Mm.
Crew rotation is complete, Captain. Lieutenant Kirk is on his way to the bridge as you requested.
Thank you, number one.
New security chief is in place, Captain.
Departing Starbase One, we are five by.
Starfleet Command, this is Enterprise requesting warp clearance.
Ship systems are optimal.
All right, well, with that, I guess we'll just go ahead and jump into the main episode discussion. We have a little recap we'll go through to kind of guide us through the episode. So this is set several months after the showdown with Control that sent the USS Discovery into the 32nd century. The events continue to weigh heavily on a bearded Captain Pike who remains uncertain about his future in Starfleet. Spock also misses his sister, Michael, but a marriage proposal from T'Pring, who will go on to be the subject of the science officer's affection in the classic episode of Muck Time, and some Vulcan romance help to distract him.
So as someone who watched Discovery,
yeah, seeing, you may have to fill things in for yeah, a little bit.
You know, honestly, I was curious about that for both of you of like, how much did y'all, I know you both have watched The Cage and reviewed that for this podcast. Having seen Discovery and what happened in that and how Discovery addressed what happens to Pike. Mm. I was curious, since y'all hadn't seen that, how much y'all were able to understand what was going on.
Oh, I didn't understand what was going on even without the Discovery stuff thrown in there. No, I had no idea. I actually forgot that they had Pike on Discovery.
Yeah, he was the whole second season. He was the captain of the Discovery.
Oh, yeah. I even though I hadn't watched it, I did kind of keep up with what was going on the show, loosely kept up with it. And I do remember Pike being on. He was the captain of the Discovery then.
Yeah, so he was the captain of the Enterprise. The Enterprise had gotten completely disabled. And so Starfleet and the Discovery was without a captain from what happened with Captain Lorca in season one. And so Starfleet, with the urgency of these seven signals that had appeared across the galaxy, took Captain Pike off of the Enterprise and put him in command of the Discovery for the Discovery to go out and figure out what all these signals were and what that means, because the Enterprise was disabled. If not, the Enterprise and Pike would be out doing that with the Enterprise crew. And I was just curious as how much, like, overall you guys had comprehended for this to sort of make sense, for this whole episode to make sense with what had previously happened with Pike and Spock and Una.
As far as for me, I think I picked it up okay. Obviously not specifics, but, you know, having the conversation with Spock and Pike where he mentions, you know, going to the moon and coming in contact with this ore or whatever, and then knowing from the original series what happens to Pike. And I did love that moment where we get to see Pike in the present day looking at himself in that wheelchair. So like I was able to make some connections there of, okay, so he knows he's headed for this.
Yes.
And through that, as well as later on when they mention, you know, because of what happened with Discovery and this this specific spot
in space
and the people of this planet were able to observe that.
Yeah.
It did seem a little strange to me that they were able to just observe that and then reverse engineer warp.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I think I got the gist of what they were trying to say happened. So I did not feel lost at all. I definitely know that there are details I missed, but I think that if this had been completely standalone, like if that season of Discovery had not happened, with maybe just some tweaks, they could have just come in cold to this.
Yeah.
Because we have the background of Pike in the original series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. You didn't really need Pike in Discovery to pull this off, but I guess for new Trek fans, like if Discovery is the only Star Trek you've ever watched, then, you know, I can understand why they might have put Pike in there for them.
Yeah, thankfully, because I know one of the things that in one of the interviews with Anson Mount that they, who plays, you know, Christopher Pike, that they were already, when they were put that character into Discovery, because Anson Mount was originally being considered to play Captain Lorca in season one, and they liked him enough to where they were like, no, we know in season two we're gonna have Pike, so let's hold him off for that, but don't tell him that this we're just gonna go, no, we have something else in mind for you, we're gonna come back to you. So when they realized that that's the route they wanted to go, they actually, he said that he submitted an audition that basically was just on the producer side, was just a formality. Because they told him it's going to be, oh gosh, what character name did they give it? it was something like, I don't remember what character name. He mentioned it in an interview that was some, like, just off of Pike. Like, he's like, oh, Parker is Captain Parker. Okay. And Captain Parker is going to be the new captain of the Discovery. And so when they cast him as Captain Pike, it's when he actually found out they called it. It's not Captain Parker, it's Christopher Pike. And so he, as a Star Trek fan, knew like who that character was. And so had that like, oh crap moment. It's like, oh
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, you want me to fill those shoes? Great.
Yeah, great. Yeah. And then he also later talks about how, you know, on Discovery that he knew he was going to be playing Captain Pike, who knows what his future is, what is destined for him as what that character's destiny is. So to watch all that unfold in season two was great. In fact, you know, if people out there haven't watched Discovery and want to watch, not the whole season, but there are a few episodes in there to more watch his journey, that to watch it strictly for his journey will sort of make sense, but overall, it's not going to make a whole lot of sense because you don't have the context of the Discovery show. So to have that, and for me to already know, like, what they showed was on Discovery, like, of his, basically, he's having to get a time crystal to help stuff that's happening in Discovery. And so the price of him taking this crystal is basically, you're going to reach out and touch this crystal, you're going to see your future. And should you decide to take this crystal, that future will now become set in stone for you.
Hmm.
And so he sees this horrific accident and sees himself in that wheelchair in the dilapidated state his body is in from this accident. And basically, you know, he's horrified seeing himself. He feels everything that happened, and he gets thrown back out of that vision and has the full horror of, I have the choice to not have that experience and to walk away from this, or I can sacrifice myself for everyone else to survive and take this. And that's what he decides to do. And so he's now living with, I mean, this utterly horrific fate, knowing that this is coming. And I remember when I was watching this episode, why doesn't Starfleet have him have Spock in like a mandatory counseling? Because, oh my goodness. Yes, everything that happened, all the specifics of what happened in Discovery going into the future, like all of that is classified at the end of Discovery. So basically they've all lied and said there's this big giant battle and Discovery was destroyed in order for this AI intelligence not to come into full whatever and destroy all known sentient life. That's basically the whole thing of season two of Discovery. So they've all been ordered to where that's all classified. You can't talk about it with anybody. Or if you do, you'll be charged with treason.
Yeah.
And so the cover story is Enterprise was just destroyed, or Enterprise, the Discovery was destroyed in this battle. Enterprise was heavily damaged. And now you've got Captain Pike that's off on Earth. For me, it was incredibly shocking to see his physical appearance in the opening of this, because it was so different from the clean-cut captain that you saw on Discovery versus this person that you see is clearly struggling with everything he's just experienced, to have let his hair grow out and his beard to grow out and just to really not care. I was very shocked, which I really shouldn't have been, because, oh my goodness, how would anybody handle knowing that this is your fate, this will happen to you, and to function. So, I mean, that was just a very interesting opening for me to have that there, and to be pressed into service again by Admiral April, knowing that he is really not in a good place to be, to be in charge of a starship and a crew. Yeah, it was just a very interesting opening for me, knowing that all that history of Discovery.
Seems like Starfleet allows its captains to go through these horrible traumatic things, and then they don't ever get them like help to like overcome it. You know, although Picard did take a leave of absence after the Borg thing, but yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's kind of what Pike being at this house in Montana and having the time off and everything was. And we hear him say, you know, you told me I had until Enterprise leave space dock to decide.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, he had it set in his mind, this is the amount of time that I have to take off, and I'm just going to be off.
To the point he's ignoring his communicator.
Yeah.
So, which I thought was very interesting. Did you notice it was sitting in front of a telephone?
Yeah. Didn't she call it a phone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why would she call it a phone?
It was his communicator was sitting in front of a rotary phone.
Yeah. And they had a flat screen TV too.
Yeah.
In their thing. The opening scene with his house and stuff, I had the same reaction I had to Picard when I'm seeing like all of this weird, like 21st century looking stuff. But then I thought, well, what about that scene in Generations with Kirk cooking in the kitchen? Yeah. You know, what did that look like? So I went back and looked at that, and yeah, it looks very 90s, 2000s, whatever version of a house. But what it is about this era of Trek more than anything else that when you can compare it to the way they did it in the older shows is you would see Picard's house, you would see Kirk's house, I guess Jake Sisko's dad's restaurant, whatever. Sometimes they would show these places as they were supposed to be in the 24th century. But what we didn't see, I think hardly at all, was tech, like technology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I know in TNG, they established that television doesn't exist anymore, you know, in the 24th century.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you're not seeing these screens and, you know, all of this technology in these in civilian life as much in the way that they portrayed it, you know, in the older shows and movies. And I think that was like the major difference. And they're actually showing that, you know, here, and it feels very 21st century. The television screen, I mean, it literally looks like somebody's living room now, mm-hmm. you know, <Yeah. laughs> and so it's just in that sense, it felt out of place for the Star Trek universe to me, but everything else I can accept because it's like, you know, that's the way they've always kind of done it. So,
right. I think for my take on that was more like they're so surrounded by technology in their job that may be the one place where they really don't want the current modern technology to be. That I want to be able to cook my own food in my own kitchen and be able to watch, you know, what would be considered ancient
entertainment. So he just has like a 300-year-old television.
I mean, who knows if that's 300 years old? It just looks like it is.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Hey, I liked the fact that he was watching The Day the Earth Stood Still. That is one of my, like, to be a black and white sci-fi movie, it's an incredibly good sci-fi movie.
Well, you know what? I guess I can't rag on it too hard because, you know, you look at all of the TNG films and their computer consoles look like they went to Best Buy and got a...
And monitor. In some cases, like, they probably did.
Yeah, I'm sure. No, they totally were real computer monitors from 1998 or whatever.
Yeah.
I did like the way that this opened.
Yeah.
With Una's narration of first contact and the experience of that and seeing this culture that had no idea that there was other intelligent life out. And so to have that and have no idea, and the first thing that you see to welcome you into that is, you know, a Federation starship.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I also loved the reveal of, oh, wait, you haven't been watching a thing about Earth history. This is another planet.
Yeah.
Because they did a really good job of making it look like something we would have seen in, you know, future for us, but not as far in the future as Star Trek. Mm-hmm. It was totally believable, and it wasn't until they finally showed the woman's face that you're like, oh, wait, this is not a human.
Right. Yeah.
And I loved that. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, I agree. They had me guessing all the way up until, because as soon as I saw that lady walking, I was like, okay, where are we? Are we on a starship? Are we at Starfleet? My mind went automatically to, you know, Starfleet Federation stuff. Mm-hmm. And then getting the reveal, so her seeing that the Enterprise is, yeah, light bulb goes off. Okay, this is an alien race. And there was something about like the displays on the wall where in that room that she was in, that kind of like what you said, Aaron, they did a good job of, it looked a little futuristic for us, but not quite there for Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because I looked at the displays and I was like, this, something seems off about this, you know?
Well, and I also thought the fact that as, you know, the alarm's going off and we see the hallway with the red flashing lights, I'm like, okay, those are really old fashioned for Star Trek, the rotating red lights. So are we in past as Star Trek sees it, but future for us. So I was trying to place it somewhere there.
Yeah, I think Dad did too initially. It's like, is this like World War III stuff happening? Like, because it just looked like we're in a bunker in like Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't. Yeah, I was in the same boat. But I do have to say too, like, what did y'all think of the theme song and the main title credits and all that stuff? What'd you think?
I like it. I don't think it's as iconic, I guess, maybe, as some of the others. Like, I don't know that after only hearing it, you know, at the beginning and at the end, if somebody played it, I would go, oh, that's the Strange New Worlds one. I might say, okay, that's obviously Star Trek music. Is it from like a scene in a movie or something?
Yeah.
Because there were hints of referencing back to the original series theme, to the Next Generation theme, which, you know, those were great. I loved that. But I just don't think it
or do you even open me with the space, A New Frontier?
Yeah, I liked that. I thought that was great. But yeah, I just found it didn't have that real like standout melody that you're like, oh yeah, start, you know, if you switch the channel, you'd be like, oh yay, Strange New Worlds is on.
You can't hum it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I really like the theme in that it harkens back to the original series. Mm-hmm. And I love the visuals because it, to me, it's a weird mix of all of the different Star Trek series opening themes. You get, you know, it opens with you getting that really the close up look at different parts of the ship, which is kind of what DS9 did sort of in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the different shots where it showed them with like the different rocks and asteroids and stuff that they were flying through reminded me of Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the shots of the flybys and stuff reminded me of TNG. And there's one shot in there in particular that gave me kind of goosebumps because it's the almost the exact same shot that we get in either First Contact or Insurrection of the Enterprise E. I can't remember which one, but it's like almost the exact same shot. And it looks almost like the ship. Obviously, it's a different shape, but it looks almost exactly like that. And so it just immediately gave me images of that. But I agree with Aaron on the music. That's something that all of the Discovery, Picard, and this show, I think it's all the same person that's, is it Jeff Russo or something like that, that has composed it. But it really, all of the shows lack that super memorable hum along melody. And this one, I couldn't even begin to hum it because other than the random TOS bits that they throw in there, which I'm glad that they did. Like, I love that they harken back to that. But I really do miss that with the shows because it was always so fun to listen to the theme songs and they were immediately recognizable, you know, and I could sit here and hum all of them to you right now. But I can't do that with these new shows and they're just not quite as memorable.
I would say like, I've kind of got the Prodigy one going through my head right now. That was probably closer to having more of that feel for me anyway. But like I can't come up with the Discovery theme and that sort of thing. But I think part of that's only because I've only seen two episodes of Discovery, so that's not really a fair shake.
as someone who's seen all four seasons, I tend to skip past the opening credits because it's like, well, why sit and watch it? I can just skip past it and continue on watching the episode. Yeah. So I mean, I even did that with Picard. So. I didn't do that with this episode because I wanted to hear the theme and see what they did with it. So, but yeah, I mean, I agree that, I mean, I was very glad to, I liked having the new take on the space, the Final Frontier, and having a new captain, Enterprise captain, say those words and to have the original series theme woven in because this does take place, you know, before that series. I liked the visuals and everything that was on there. So I don't know that every time this, you know, show comes on that I'm going to sit and watch
right
through the main title, but, I did like what they did with it. So I thought it was a very pretty piece of music.
Mm. I'm really glad that they did the Space Final Frontier. We haven't heard that since, did Enterprise didn't do that, did they?
Mm-mm. No, Next Generation was the...
Was the only, was the show well, that did that?
It, yeah, of the shows. They did do it at the, was it the end
the of... The end of Enterprise.
Oh, I was thinking...
did it at the end of Enterprise.
Okay, see, I haven't gotten there yet, but they also did it at the end of one of the Kelvin movies as well.
Yes, yes, they did.
It was interesting because they got each of the cast members to do a segment of it. So that was kind of neat.
Was that the end of Beyond?
I want to say it was Beyond.
Probably, because I don't remember that.
Yeah. I also read a really funny version that was like... Somebody said, this is why they won't let Dr. McCoy read that monologue. And then they rewrote it like space, the most horrifying frontier. And it was just like on and on and on. It was all like, this place sucks. So whoever wrote that, that was very clever.
All right. So we'll move on here. We finally meet Robert April, who was the Enterprise's first captain and Pike's predecessor. Now an admiral, April convinces Pike to grab the center seat again by informing him that his number one had gone missing on a first contact mission to Kylie 279. A quick ride aboard the shuttlecraft Stamets, because Paul Stamets perished in the flight against control, of course, and Pike is back aboard his repaired and upgraded ship. Paul Stamets is a familiar name, but I don't know who he is.
He was in Discovery, so he was the scientist that invented the spore drive.
Oh, that thing. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I keep hearing people bash that.
So it was, honestly, I was wondering how they were going to eliminate that from Star Trek. Because it's one of those things, like, in watching Discovery, I was like, well, holy crap, this wasn't, like, of course everybody's bashing this to know that Janeway didn't have to get stranded in the Delta Quadrant because this technology existed 100-and-something years before that. So, to have that be, like, a banned, because that's what happens at the end of Season 2, is they, as part of the classified information, is banning that technology, of not letting that technology be developed anymore, of classifying all of it. And just sticking with warp drive.
In other words, we screwed up creating it, so now we got to undo it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which happens a lot in Star Trek.
Yeah. So, even Captain Pike, who in Discovery, like the Enterprise set out the war with the Klingons, and so he didn't know much about the spore drive. So they have a place where they need to go in the Beta Quadrant that's like going to take 125 years with warp drive to get them there. And so they were like, well, we can use the spore drive to get there. And so he's like, okay, let's do that. And so they sort of explain what's going on. And he's looking at them like, what is this? It's basically like it operates off of mushrooms. Like it's a very trippy.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah. That was, I think Pike explained the reaction that a lot of Star Trek fans had to
this. Basically, he's like, you know, you're telling me this ship is going to fly on a cloud of mushrooms. I'm just going to have to take your word on faith on this. So let's go. So yeah, just to have that kind of like, yeah, okay. Yeah. We get that this is a weird, dumb idea that we went with. So,
oh man, but Stamets, has that name existed though in Star Trek before? Because I feel like I've heard it on one of the other shows before.
Not that I know of.
I don't think so. It was only vaguely familiar to me, and it was more so, it rang more of a bell when you read it out than when I heard it on the show, because for some reason my mind just went immediately to the way the naming conventions for shuttlecraft. And I'm like, okay, well, I think it was the runabouts in Deep Space Nine were all rivers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the ones on the original series were all famous scientists and stuff. So I just kind of like lumped it into that. But it didn't ring enough of a bell that I was like, oh, where was that person from?
I do have to say, I liked what in the scene where that the, you know, you have Captain Pike that's he's reading the report on this new officer that he's going to be working with. And then he's really not paying attention to what's happening inside the shuttle until the pilot of the shuttle hails the Enterprise and this shuttlecraft Stamets. And so he hears that name and just immediately, you know, jerks his head up like, what?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't catch his reaction to it. I thought he just kind of looked up because, oh, we're coming up on the Enterprise. My thing with the him reading that report was all I really caught of it was that it mentioned the Gorn.
I didn't
clue in what it actually was. And so my gut reaction was similar to when I did see the first two episodes of Discovery going, whoa, they changed the Klingons. That's really weird. My brain hurts. Yeah. And so I went, wait a minute. Were those people from the beginning supposed to be the Gorn? Please don't change the Gorn that much.
Yeah.
That was my gut reaction. But yeah, it obviously gets sorted out later on that no, those people were not the Gorn. And I was completely wrong about what he was reading. So
I do have to say, I thought it was weird that he was on the shuttle being taken to the Enterprise and then gets to the Enterprise and decides to beam in.
Yeah, agreed. What? I was like, couldn't he have just beamed from the starbase?
Yeah.
Or I did think that was a little strange.
Oh, so they weren't taking him from Earth to the ship?
Well, I don't know where he came from, but yeah.
But still, even why still. Would you beam from the shuttle that's just off the saucer of the ship onto the ship? Like, you could have just docked in the shuttle bay.
Well, because it's quicker, I guess. I mean, the shuttle wasn't the Enterprise's shuttle, was it?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's no need for it to dock. You just beam over. I did at first had that reaction too. I was like, well, okay, that's weird. Because usually we see the shuttle dock, but
yeah,
I thought, well, you know, it's actually more efficient that way.
But speaking of transporters and efficiency, the idea of having a transporter in sick bay is genius.
Yes.
I'm like, why has no one else done that before? I mean, we have seen, there was mention of a fetal transporter in, was it one of the Kelvin movies? Or so there was somewhere. Oh, it was in Voyager. That's right. So they had a fetal transporter. They were able to do that. But no one has ever just had a transporter pad in sick bay and used it for emergencies. Why not? That makes such total sense.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I'd never thought about that.
No. I mean, obviously they'll do site to site transports and that sort of thing as needed, but to just have it there in sick bay was perfect.
Although, you know, when you think back at like, the others like TNG, for instance, they would beam right back. They would like beam directly into sick bay sometimes.
Yeah.
But not every time.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand. thinking about that, I don't know why they wouldn't do that every time. But
calling for medical help and emergency medical transport. Hello. That makes sense.
Well, it's in sick bay.
Oh, yeah. Going down. That's true.
But I think the reason they didn't do it in the previous series is because the idea was in order to make a transport like really safe and secure, you have to be beaming from a pad to a pad. Like that's what makes it really reliable and everything. And so I guess if someone's unstable, you're going to beam them to a pad to make sure that it works the best. Because obviously like anytime they say, hey, can you do a site to site transport? it's almost kind of a, all right, well, here goes, even though it's, you know, it always, I shouldn't say always works, but anything with a transporter can go wrong. But yeah, to have it be like, okay, we're going to put a transporter pad in sick bay so that we have this like reliable way to transport in and out. That kind of blew my mind a little bit. Like, well, duh.
Well, I had never thought about the transporter pad versus site to site before. I didn't know that that was like the thing where, well, it's like more stable.
I don't know that that's the reason, but it's like we see there's always at least a pad on one end, because obviously if you beam down to a planet that doesn't have a transporter room, you just beam into a location. Mm-hmm. But it always seems like you're asking for a special thing or a special favor or something to do a site-to-site transport. So it almost seems like in that instance, it's kind of, okay, well, I have to beam you from the place, put you in the transporter system, and then basically stop you from materializing on the pad and then reroute you to the next location. As opposed to just doing a one step dematerialize, rematerialize. I don't know. I'm probably just making things up off the top of my head. There's probably someone out there who understands the ins and outs of why they did things a certain way with the transporter.
Speaking of the transporter, when they beamed up, or when Pike beamed into the Enterprise for the first time in the transporter room, mm-hmm. and they gave us the wide shot, I was like, holy crap, that is a huge transporter room.
It is huge. Oh my word.
But the whole ship was like that, though.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like every room was about four times larger than it needed to be. You know?
Well, because when we see Pike is, when Spock comes to look for Pike, at first I thought that was his quarters.
It is his quarters. And I thought,
it is?
It is his quarters.
It is his quarters. Yes, whoa. I had the same.
Because I was like,
the bridge saying that I'm gonna be in my quarters.
He has a fireplace. He has a bar.
Yeah I'm
he's
like,
got like five rooms in there. Like, what
I
the
thought,
crap?
I thought that was the rec room.
No.
And I wondered why no one else was there. Oh my word. Yeah.
And his ready room is huge as well.
Which one is his ready room?
That's the room that's later on when they're doing a briefing.
Not the conference room?
Yeah, no, that's his ready room.
Oh my gosh.
It's like his ready room conference room.
What the heck?
I know.
Yeah, this Enterprise is too big. Well, I mean, it is and it isn't. It depends on which version you're looking at. I mean, obviously, the Enterprise that we're used to from the original series is tiny in comparison to most of the other ships in the series. I mean, Voyager is comparable in size, and obviously the Defiant is much smaller because it's intended to be small and stealthy. But then you look at the Kelvin movies, and that Enterprise is much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were probably leaning more on that being kind of the template for this Enterprise as opposed to the original series Enterprise.
Yeah, and engineering just went on and on and on.
Yeah.
You know, I would say that overall, I really like the look. You know, I was super impressed with the attention to detail that they did with this. Because, I mean, I haven't seen all of TOS, but I've seen enough of it to recognize, you know, when they were paying homage to certain tech and stuff on that show. Mm. I mean, you saw it on the panels, mm-hmm. on, you know, on the back of the bridge, the turbo lift, even like just the black clipboard type thing that Pike carried, you know, around with him. Stuff like that, you know, with those communicators look almost exactly like they did in TOS.
Yeah.
So I really, really appreciated all of that they did. It was a really good redesign, updated, but not so different that it was hard to see it in the Star Trek world. And I really, really like that about this show. And it's what I miss from Picard. And Discovery, I haven't seen enough of that to know. But
I mean, I was thinking with Discovery and how futuristic that looked to be something that was, you know, pre-original series. So I thought they did a good job of, like with what Sarah said, of doing that fine line of, like, if the original series was being done today, that this, maybe not quite this way, but it just looks like a more modern original series.
Yeah.
With still with all the push buttons and things like that, that Discovery had, I don't know if Discovery was intended to be a newer ship than the Enterprise, but it for sure had, you know, the touch panels and the holographic imagery. And in fact, it even mentions in that Pike, when the Enterprise is being refit, to for number one to have his engineer take all of the holographic technology out of the Enterprise because of some other stuff that's happened. That, because I don't like talking to holograms, they look like ghosts. So he orders all the holographic technology removed from Enterprise. So that would explain why Discovery looks so advanced and the Enterprise does not.
Yeah. And
so yeah, I thought they did a great job because they were one of the things I were talking about in one of the interviews is how, like, everyone that's working on the sets and the visual design, all that stuff, that they're all fans of Star Trek. And so their whole goal is to do a really good job and to make a show that the fans of the original series would like, not just, you know, Star Trek in general, but the people who grew up on the original series and love that show would hopefully like this.
Yeah. See, this is what I wish they had done on Picard, because it just, I'm not going to rehash it, but it's just like Picard just doesn't feel like it's in the Star Trek universe to me at all, because the design is just so different from, it's almost like they try to redo stuff rather than, you know, draw on what we saw in the 24th century Trek. I wish they had done this type of design, you know, with Picard. The things that irked me though about it was I don't really like the super glossy black floor, you know, everywhere. It's a little like distracting. And then of course, just the room sizes are just freaking huge. And I think it takes some of the intimacy out of I really liked the intimate feel of the starships on Voyager and TNG. And this show is lacking that a little bit just because it's so huge. It feels more like the movie version, Star Trek. Also, everything just, I don't know if you guys get this impression, but everything just feels like super glam to me. And I understand you want to have that updated look, but at the same time, it's like it, you can go almost too far with it to where it just becomes more of a distraction.
Yeah. It's almost a little bit like some of those high definition televisions that have that setting that makes it like hyper definition, and you get that like soap opera vision where it's just like it's a little bit too much. It's a little bit too in your face and I don't know where I was going to end that sentence, but
I think in your face is the right term for it. Like, I like the overall look of it. It's just like, just tone it down a little bit.
I'll be the one that's going to agree to disagree because I didn't feel like that at all with
Strange I knew Worlds. You wouldn't. Yeah.
No, I did with Discovery. So like having all the, like the J.J. Abrams-esque later, the Kelvin universe feel was for sure in Discovery, of having the lens flares and all the
lights. I was going to say, at least it's not lens flare.
No, that was all in Discovery. So I didn't notice that in Strange New Worlds. Yeah. I will say that on something a little different, but still talking the Trek technology that we see, when Pike contacts Spock on Vulcan, I thought it was so cool that he just took his communicator and docked it for it to become a visual communication. Yeah. I was like, well, that's cool.
And my first thought was when he did that, I was like, oh, he's going to go with visual. You might want to push shirt on. Yeah, my favorite was
him going, are you naked?
Yeah. Which, of course, you know, I was like, okay, well, so Pike had the exact first thought I did.
Yeah. I laughed out loud in that moment. So, yeah.
Well, that's going to be the next technology. Just watch. Apple or somebody's going to come up with that technology where you just like dock your phone and then FaceTime or like a call turns into FaceTime like on a bigger screen somewhere.
Yeah. I think I've seen some where it's not like docking your phone to it, but I think you can almost like cast it to a bigger screen.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, no, I mean, I've seen, I've heard somebody has like a Google Home station or something that has a screen on it. And so it's like you can transfer the call to that and it makes it a bigger screen as opposed to on your phone or something. But yeah, it's not literally docking your phone to it.
And, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Pike's arrival coincides with introductions to security chief and acting first officer. Noonien Singh. How many Noonien Singhs does Star Trek have?
A lot. Yeah.
Communications cadet Nyota Uhura and pilot Lieutenant Erica Ortegas. Though the crew must leave before taking aboard their chief engineer and someone named Lieutenant Kirk.
Yeah, interesting to see Cadet Uhura, and I have to say, Lieutenant Ortega, she may become one of my favorite characters on this show. So
I like her so far, too.
But I did think it was weird that, you know, Captain Pike is, like, a little thrown off that Spock is not going to be his temporary first officer, and not only do I have a new number one, I've got a new security officer, and she's fulfilling both of these roles, and I don't know her. This is not what I was expecting.
Why isn't Spock his first officer?
From what I remember is that Starfleet wanted him to remain as the science officer for this mission instead of the first officer. So,
yeah, but in the original series, he was both.
He was both with Kirk.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
yeah.
So but why couldn't he just be both? Because the person who is his first officer is also the security officer. So I can't.
Well, he's not, though, in the cage. Yeah, so maybe that's what they were going with.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, number one, Una, is his first officer, is number one. So, and that's who they're going to rescue. So I don't know why Starfleet Command made the decision. Here's your new security chief, and she's going to be your first officer for this mission. I don't know. I don't know that it was
adequately
explained.
That's weird, because those are two, like, pretty intense jobs.
Yeah.
Yes. So. And you would think if you want
unless
someone
you just outranked Spock. I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. Because you would think you would want someone who actually knows the captain and knows his rhythms and how to work with him. And obviously Spock does. So, I mean, it's an acting position anyway. Why do you have to make it this new person?
I don't know. It is number one in the cage, so I guess they just wanted to keep true to that. I don't know. Okay, can you guys set me straight on something? The girl that Pike's girlfriend, basically, that's not the same as his number one, right? Not the one we see, but the one that got rescued. Is it the same girl, or are they different?
They're different.
Okay, that's what I thought. But
from
they
the
look
lady
the same.
At the beginning of the episode, she's a captain of another starship.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. I mean, there were some similarities in how they looked and stuff, but no, they're definitely different people.
Well, now that I think back on it, she had like lighter brown hair, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His girlfriend. Yeah. Do you think we're going to see Lieutenant Kirk at all?
We did at the end of the episode.
We did.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was Samuel Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy that came on with the mustache?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's Kirk?
That's Samuel Kirk.
Samuel Kirk.
Oh.
Who I'm like.
So it's not James T. Kirk.
No. And you don't know how they're related yet.
No. Or if they are.
Or yeah.
Oh, I'm assuming they are. But
I thought Lieutenant Kirk was referring to James Kirk.
Well, that's what they wanted you to think.
Yeah.
And that's definitely what I thought until he showed up, and I was like,
I didn't even catch his last name when he said that. You know what it was? I was looking at him and I was thinking, is that supposed to be McCoy? Because I was thinking McCoy and I didn't even hear him say his last name.
Yeah.
This is how I miss stuff in episodes.
Obviously.
I just see something on the screen and I start thinking about it, and then like five things have happened and I have no idea what they are, which is why I was lost for half of this episode, because I just kept thinking about stuff that I was looking at, and I got the gist of what was happening. That's fine.
Yeah.
But the whole plot, like I have no idea. I didn't understand them kidnapping the guys, what they were doing with that. I have no idea.
Shocking.
They needed something from them to get into the building.
Yeah.
So that's all I need to know. So
I did think it was a little weird in this, because I've been like reviewing the notes I took, just stuff I noticed when watching the episode, that so in the scene that, the captain comes on the bridge, he does a public address to the crew. And so you see that these different areas of the ship as he's addressing the crew of what their mission is. And it flips to their recreation lounge. Oh, as it goes through the entire ship, it lands in the recreation lounge, or what I assume is the recreation lounge, because it looks like a bar and tables. Mm-hmm. Everybody is standing at attention.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so weird. Like, how's he going to know? No one on the bridge is where they can actually see him.
Yeah. It's for dramatic effects, Megan.
But I was like, okay, why? Like, I can get, like, everyone stop what you're doing and pay attention, but like I wouldn't like stand to attention just to hear what the captain's saying.
Maybe those were the cadets that were on their rotations or whatever, and so maybe that's the thing. Because like, I know. Well, I think in the Navy and stuff, when you hear that like bosun's whistle, that's like, pay attention, come to attention, and so maybe the cadets are just kind of trained that when you hear that, you stand to attention no matter what, kind of thing. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it was everybody. I would hope that the crew of the ship is not all cadets with just the senior officers.
Well, no, but I mean, like down in when they showed in engineering and stuff, some of the people there weren't they weren't at attention. They were standing and like stopped what they were doing.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, now that you mention it, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't think I even noticed they were at attention. I just was kind of looking around at the sets and stuff.
Yeah, I was paying more attention to the room than the people standing.
Well, I will say, like, I did watch this episode through twice. The first time was just like, I didn't want to, like, have to take notes. I just wanted to watch the episode, and so it was the second time through that I noticed that. I was like, wait, they're all everyone everywhere is standing at attention except for the bridge. This is weird.
I will say it was very interesting that when they get to the planet to rescue Una and the scientists and stuff, they sent that whole big ship with just three people on it.
Mm-hmm.
Seems strange to me.
Yeah. What's with that?
Like, I understand if you're only going to send three people, you're going to send, a command person to make first contact and scientists to, talk to them about the warp drive and that sort of thing.
Is it even safe to run a ship that big with three people?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, there are situations where we've seen ships being run by just one or two people, but they're always kind of emergency situations.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you'd think if they were only going to send three people, why wouldn't you just send like a more long range shuttle? Or if you want to send a starship,
where's the crew?
Yeah. Like, why is it not just, or did they have an inkling that they didn't tell Pike about that this was not a normal first contact situation? Like, I was very confused by that.
I don't know. Megan, you seem to understand all this stuff.
Well, I mean, I don't know how far ahead into the episode discussion we want to get, because that happens farther down in the episode than what we've gotten to currently. So
we've been kind of bouncing. I've mostly been jumping us ahead.
All right. Well, yeah, in a private chat, Pike reveals to Spock that he saw a vision of the horrible training accident that will severely injure him when they visited the Klingon home planet Boreth during the search for a time crystal in Discovery Season 2. Upon arriving at Kylie's 279, the Enterprise finds the USS Archer abandoned but intact, with local space giving no signs that the planet has achieved even rudimentary spaceflight. The population hasn't created warp drive. It has created a warp bomb.
So I did think it was very interesting when they went through in the briefing with Captain Pike and Spock and La'an of how that Spock is basically saying, you know, in the history of Vulcans exploring space, that we've never come across a species that developed a warp bomb first. Yeah. That warp drive always, the warp drive to get out of, has always been the first thing. Is in his comparison that with particle physics, was that the nuclear bomb could have been invented before particle physics, but never has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought that was like an interesting comparison to hear that. And like, even just like my rudimentary understanding, like, for someone, I mean, the atomic bomb and how that has evolved on Earth to the incredibly destructive force that it is today. Like, my utter horror of hearing that they had developed a warp bomb.
Yeah, that would explode the planet.
Yes.
I
just remember sitting there going, holy crap.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting concept, though, because I'd never thought about a warp bomb before.
Me either.
Mm. I mean, we've seen instances where, like, a ship will eject its warp core kind of offensively, but never purposely as we're going to take warp technology and make it a bomb.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense that somebody would do that, though.
Yeah. And there were several things in this series or in this episode that I was just like, okay, somebody is really thinking about Star Trek here. And they've gone, okay, what are concepts that we know and how can they be tweaked to make it a intense situation or a unique idea? And I have to say, like, the people who came up with these ideas, they did a great job.
But I also did like on the flip side of it, because we talked about Captain Pike's quarters a little bit ago, I liked having him and Spock have this discussion in their quarters to where Pike actually opens up to Spock, because he hasn't told anyone what he saw. Like, even in Discovery, people asked him what had happened. He's like, well, that was for me alone. And so to finally have Spock go, what happened?
Yeah.
What did you see? What, cause it's affecting you badly. What happened? So for him to have the person that he can actually talk to, and not commit treason by talking about it, to Spock. And so to have that for the people who haven't seen Discovery to see all of that scene and what had happened, or what the history of future events type thing. So I liked having that to more establish their relationship. So I that was a really good scene for me, and to have, you know, Spock, you know, basically go, so what are you going to do with this? Basically, you know, you're going to have to make a decision to continue to be the captain that you are or not, but you've got to make that decision.
I really liked Spock and Pike's relationship in this. It was very reminiscent of Kirk and Spock in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I agree. I thought it was good to have a way to put that exposition in there, but it didn't feel like, okay, we're going to shoehorn some exposition in here. It felt like a genuine conversation.
Yeah. And even though I hadn't seen the episode of Discovery, I'm glad they included all of that stuff in there, because that explained that horrible face that he saw on his pad towards the beginning of the episode. I was like, what in the world? I thought that that was going to be the start of the plot. Like, he was starting to see, like, hallucinations of stuff, and that was going to be part of the plot of the episode. But I guess if you had seen Discovery, then you knew exactly what that was. But yeah, I also really like that they have a ship named the USS Archer too. That was really cool.
Yeah, I caught that as well, and I thought that was a great little note out there for people who've seen Enterprise, and for people who haven't seen it, it's not such an odd starship name that you'd think, oh, well, you know, why is it named that?
Yeah. All right. So in sickbay, we welcome the cheerful Dr. Mbenga. Is that how you say his name?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. And the energetic civilian nurse, Christine Chapel, to the show. Chapel's civilian status cleverly explains why she will later choose to officially sign on with Starfleet in What Are Little Girls Made Of? So I guess that's the TOS episode.
Mm-hmm.
As fate would have it, Chapel pioneers the genetic manipulation technique that Starfleet so often used in the TNG era to blend in with pre-warp species. Is this a TNG technology? Because I don't remember them doing it like this in TNG.
Well, they always called it like surgical alteration, which I always thought was like, okay, that's rather extreme. I like this explanation much better. Mm-hmm.
Well, I do too, but okay. So it's supposed to be the same thing as TNG. All right. Okay. So, they're getting disguised to infiltrate enemy encampments. The transporter also has a nifty feature. It can change a landing party member's clothes and outfit them with equipment during a beam down. Okay. That answers my question, because I was like, does a transporter just give them new clothes as they beam down?
Yeah, and they stated that.
Okay, well, I obviously was thinking about something else when they said that.
But, I mean, that is new. Like, that's something we've not seen in Trek before. And so I was like, when they were saying all that, like, you know, we're adjusting your clothing pattern to do this, and you're going to have all this, you know, your tricorder and all this stuff. And I was like, wow, that's an impressive transporter.
Okay, so they were saying all of that in sick bay?
No, they were saying that in the transporter room. So after they'd been had genetic manipulation and to look like the aliens that they were going down to the planet for. And so they just walk into the transporter room in uniform, which in TNG and in Deep Space Nine, and they walk in dress in whatever.
Yeah, they replicate outfit. The clothes first.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah, that's why I was like, why does Spock not know he had shorts on?
Yeah.
So I guess that answers that is kind of cool. And then they can apparently beam whatever the thing is that Spock needed for his retinal scan directly into him. Like, is that what happened? Or
yes, but that was new too. Like, that was not something that they knew they could do.
Yeah. That was something they were like, can you do this? No, we'll do it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I would say backing up on this and, you know, coming into sick bay, I like Dr. Mbenga.
Me too.
Like for Pike to walk in and give us a word of wisdom. Okay. Don't eat the house dressing. I was like expecting another line, like don't eat the yellow snow or like something.
Yeah.
Like that. I was like, okay, I like this. I like this doctor. This is going to be really good. And I liked how Nurse Chapel was introduced and how the genetic manipulation thing, like for me, that was like, oh, this is really interesting. Now on the flip side of this, so they're going through this genetic manipulation, they're being sedated or giving a sedative first and then immediately being given this injection to start that process to change their appearance. And so you got Lon that says, I don't want the sedative, just start the process. And so they concede through discussion, concede, and so Nurse Chapel injects her. And it's immediate.
Yeah.
Or almost immediate that her face starts transforming, but you've got Spock and Pike that have had the injections for several minutes, and you've got nothing.
Yeah.
Maybe the sedative.
That and the sedative didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Because they're both awake and talking to her.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't know if the sedative... so at first, that confused me because I was like, okay, so does the sedative just dull the pain or does it put them to sleep? And then another line says that they, like, go to sleep, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so why are you up talking right now?
Yeah.
Because, when Captain Pike got off the biobed to go talk to Lon, like, my first instinct was like, oh my gosh, don't let him get up. He's going to, like, pass out.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I had a brief thought of, did they just confuse the word sedative with anesthetic?
Yeah.
Like, did they mean we're giving you an anesthetic? And they said sedative, but then no, why would then Lon is worried about being awake? So clearly they meant sedative, but obviously it's really slow acting.
Yeah.
And then I was fine with that until Chapel injected La'an and she immediately starts changing. I'm like, okay, no.
Well, whatever Crusher gives a sedative in TNG is like they immediately go to sleep.
Yes.
It's not like, and even now, like,
yeah, when it's they pretty give quick.
Like, 5 seconds, you're out, you know?
Yeah.
They had to get lines in. So.
Exactly. I was willing to go there because, okay, they needed to put this dialogue in, but, yeah, as soon as it was like, okay, well, now you're doing it works one way for one person and another way for another person. So
yeah.
It was...
which plenty of Star Trek episodes have done that.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't understand any of this retinal scan thing of, I don't know. Were they taking something from the guy's eyes?
No. Basically? So with what was explained with Spock is that, his Vulcan, half human, half Vulcan DNA was going to cause issues with this genetic manipulation, that it wasn't going to last as long.
I got that.
Yeah, so they needed to hurry on what they were doing. And so they get down to the planet and Chapel, I guess she's monitoring or she's running her rerunning simulations, and she realizes that this is actually running out much faster on Spock than I thought it was going to. And he is not, they've called up to the Enterprise and say, look, you know, change our badges so we can get in this building. And she realizes, oh, this, he's not going to be able to get in. He's not going to pass a scan because this is wearing off. So that's why, like, he needs another injection. That's why they tried to stop them before going in the building and the away team had gotten too far in. That's why, like, Pike was like, oh, we can't stop. Like,
yeah,
we have to keep going. So, that was just a weird.
I know. I mean, thing. I got what was going on, but I didn't understand what was the retinal scan scanning?
Well, it scans his retina, but basically his eye was turning back to his Vulcan eye.
Okay, but
They beamed more of the genetic material or like whatever changes the genetics onto Spock's eye, which would then absorb and his eye went back to the alien eye. And then it was able to be scanned.
Okay. I guess what I don't, aren't retinal scans, don't they scan something specific to you so you can be ID'd?
Yes.
Yes. And so that was on their badge.
Yeah.
So they were holding their badge up to it's like same thing if we wanted to do retinal scan somewhere, you have a badge that you hold up to that has your scan in it, and then the scanner is comparing the current scan with what you've got on your badge or whatever's stored in a system to make sure that they match to allow you access or not. And so basically what was on the badge and what was in Spock's eye currently was not going to match, which why they had to beam more stuff into his eye.
How did they get access though?
They basically used the badges from the two guys they had beamed up to kind of retrofit, but basically to work it so that they made a copy that would work. So they, because the matching system was in the badge, the computer read the badge and then read the eye and was like, okay, yeah, these two things match.
So they went down to kidnap people basically to get their badges?
No, they beamed down to observe and then realized that they needed to get into that building. So like what's in the next thing to read, like sort of covers this. So we're a little bit ahead of where we are. I don't know if you want to read this first. All right, yeah. And then I answer that.
Okay, so Pike, Spock, and Noonien Singh, I just want to say Noonien Singh every single time.
Yeah.
Arrive on a divided planet with two warring factions that seek to wipe each other out. Despite some obstacles, the trio make their way into a secure facility and rescue Number One and her two cohorts. Unfortunately, Una informs Pike that their battle with Control took place so close to this planet that it allowed them to study and reverse engineer warp technology. To correct this unintentional influence, the captain makes a bold decision to reveal his crew's alien origins and presence of the Enterprise to the locals.
So when the three beam down to the planet and they're just seeing this protest, seeing the, I'm assuming, news vids that are on the giant screen outside, La'an makes a scan and says, look, our people are inside that building. That building's shielded. We have to get in it. And so conveniently, two people come out that are dressed to go in that building. And so she fakes the medical need and they help her. And so they, that's why they beam those two up to the Enterprise, which I thought that was weird that that was like the suggestion to, we need to hide these people. Let's hide them on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
and copy their clothes and we need this badge. And so we match it so we can get in. Is that kind of like, I mean, when she made that suggestion, I think myself and Captain Pike both went, what? Out loud at the same time.
So but why didn't they just beam into the building?
Because it was shielded.
Oh.
But they could beam out of it. So yeah, that's weird. Or they couldn't beam down to the level where the people were. I'm not quite sure. It was funny to have Nurse Chapel chase, the scientist all over the ship and had to have his interaction with Cadet Uhura in the turbo lift and, you know, Chapel being beamed to the bridge to get the sample that she needed. And so like all of that was fun and funny. And then even having, you know, Lieutenant Ortega is like, why does this always happen when I'm,
yeah,
I'm in charge. So all that was fun. So I liked having the fun moments that were in this. And then I also liked, how the having, you know, Pike and Spock and La'an getting in this building and, to get down to where their people are and to have in the elevator and to have Spock's ears starting to revert back and to have the other, you know, one of the native people of the planet start to notice that, but the other two are just like, no, it's nothing. And then yep. Have the floor randomly open. Like, were they deliberately trying to get off on that floor? But it was like, or is it, ding, let's get Spock off the elevator.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That it just happened to be the right floor. So yeah, it was just, all of that was fun. And then, to have like their discussion in, you know, they get everyone out, get into the elevator, and then to have this weird discussion of like for Pike to get the report of what actually happened and to have Number One go, well, I can't discuss it in front of her because it's, you know, all part of the classified what just happened, you know, 3 months ago with Discovery and Enterprise. But you have these two other people that were rescued with Number One that I'm also assuming you wouldn't be able to do that report in front of, technically. Well, but Lon is the only one you're concerned about hearing it. And then, you know, Pike says, you know, basically, screw it, tell me anyway.
I was wondering if, because they were with Una on this mission, that maybe there was some understanding that this may have come about because of the situation from Discovery. And so they sent people who were in on it. And that maybe that's why it was just the three of them.
Well, it made it sound like they had discovered it on the planet itself. And yeah, not...
I have no idea whether how that worked, but that, like, it was one of those things where there's kind of a contradicting sort of feeling to it for me. Because, I mean, earlier I was saying, why were there only three people on the ship? But then now I'm saying, well, maybe there was only three because they were the ones that were in on it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But so there were some little details like that that didn't necessarily make sense, but they were small enough that I just looked past them, I guess.
Now, I will have to say, when before they got in the elevator and Spock, just Captain, I'm in like considerable pain, and then just screams. I laughed so hard. And it's like when it revealed that his face had reverted back, and he's like, huh, okay. Like, I was like, okay, well, that just happened.
Well, I didn't know if he was trying to create a distraction at first.
Yeah, that know? Was my first thought.
No, it was because I talked about when his ears, when they were in the elevator, how incredibly painful it was that his ears were reverting. But I did like that Pike did make the decision of like, well, we've already so heavily influenced this society by our own actions that he makes a decision. It honestly can't get any worse if we continue to talk with these people. So let's go talk to these people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a classic, like, first contact story in Star Trek, where something bad always happens and they end up having to reveal more than they intended to, you know? But yeah, I did like that decision, though, by him.
But I even liked, like, when they're in that they're taken to the office of the political leader of this particular party, and that they're talking with her and how she's, you know, she totally understands who they are as much as she can, who they are, that they are in fact, you know, not from the planet, but basically for her to go, your rules don't apply to me.
Yeah.
Why would you have the arrogance? Is that more like that? Why would you have the arrogance to think that your rules apply to me?
Yeah.
So I liked hearing that, because you don't hear that in the first contact stuff we've seen in Star Trek. So I liked having that perspective. And then, you know, for her to say, you know, whoever has the biggest stick wins. And as they're being escorted out, that, you know, Pike realizes, wait a minute, I have the biggest stick.
Yeah.
And orders the Enterprise into low orbit. And so, yeah, it just, I liked that.
Yeah.
Although Lady looked like any generic 60-something-year-old senator or something. Congresswoman.
Yeah. Well, and I think, in a way, that was on purpose, because
it was definitely on purpose.
They wanted it to be like, our civilizations are so similar. Like, you are literally headed down the same path we went. And so they even did some visual similarities and cultural similarities and stuff. I thought was, initially I thought it was a little weird, but then I was like, no, I see where they're going with this here. This is cool.
This episode addresses the current societal divides on 21st century Earth by showcasing them through the lens of 23rd century Kylie 279. Pike explains that the United States underwent a second civil war and the eugenics wars conflicts that led to Earth's catastrophic Third World War III.
Third World War III.
Yes.
Numbers are hard numbers.
Wow. Complete with archival images, Pike's presentation convinces the local factions to make peace and turn their eyes towards the stars.
I have to say, like, that is probably one of the best speeches a captain's given in Star Trek. I loved that we finally get a very brief history of what we've learned is, you know, our not ours, but Earth's, you know, future history. Mm-hmm. Of how, you know, that basically, I loved how they named it the Second Civil War, which is all events that has taken place inside the last, you know, 3 years. That he said, you know, how that it from that became known as the Eugenics Wars, that then became known as, you know, World War III. And so it's the best explanation that we've had of what these individual wars were, because we've seen the aftermath of World War III in First Contact, but mm-hmm. to have that explained and to have the visual of and the more detail of what happened and all that, and to see in more detail of like how Earth was really devastated with all-out nuclear war, and to see, you know, this is what happened to us in the 21st century, and, you know, here we've managed to get to where we are here 200 years later. So I liked that, and to have that comparison of you guys are where we were, and you can choose to what we would say repeat our mistakes or not do what we did and be better than we were and better yourselves. It made me think of that line of First Contact when Deanna Troi is talking with Zefram Cochrane, that the way that First Contact helped Earth and that, you know, it united humanity in a way that no one ever thought possible when they realized that they were not alone in the universe. So to have that thrown out there as an option for this planet, I liked that. I liked this whole scene.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a nice nice way to resolve the conflict. I do wonder how the cameras survived the nuclear blast that right. recorded all of it. Right?
Yeah. You know, you got to have a little bit of disbelief there, I guess.
Well, I mean, we have footage of, you know, what happened with atomic bombs being dropped and the devastation that caused, you know, today when... So something had to survive for us to see what the devastation was with the atomic testing.
Mm. Well, they were far enough away from the explosion to film that, but these cameras looked like they were right there. unless they were like, had the feed was going up to like a satellite or something.
Yeah.
And maybe it was recorded, you know, offsite or something like that. But yeah, I just thought, man, they have so many... cameras capturing these nuclear explosions everywhere. All right, so as we wrap up the episode, we find out that Leon has a history with the Gorn. As an ensign, Number One was involved in Leon's rescue. Chief Kyle beams aboard the Einar, Engineer Himmer, and Lieutenant Samuel Kirk, complete with the epic mustache his corpse sported in the TOS episode Operation Annihilate. The addition of James T. Kirk's brother to the crew is a splendid surprise.
It was his brother.
Yeah. So I guess we're going to see him eventually in TOS.
Yeah, that's interesting because that's not the name that is given for Kirk's brother that I was familiar with. So when they said Samuel Kirk, I was like, I don't know who this guy is meant to be, but I'm assuming some relative of James. So yeah, it's good to have that explanation, I guess.
Well, maybe I just clicked on Operation Annihilate, and they say his name is Sam.
Okay.
So maybe they just shortened it in TOS, I don't know.
Well, I haven't seen that original series episode, but...
Yeah, I haven't either.
I was just referring to... I know in the Kelvin movies, we see his brother is George as well as his father.
I forgot about it.
And so I was just assuming that was the same in previous iterations, or maybe it had never been mentioned at all. But yeah, I guess I was incorrect in that assumption.
Wait, so Kirk's brother shows up in the movies?
Just in the very first one, we see him very, or he's mentioned, and there was a little bit of a change done. Like when you watch the behind the scenes things, there's a scene where we see young James Kirk driving the convertible, and he drives past a teenager walking down the road. Mm-hmm. There was a deleted scene that introduced that as his older brother, George Kirk. But then when they cut that scene, they then changed that person's name when he drives past him. He calls him a different name.
Like, yeah, Tommy, I think, if I remember right.
Could be. It was definitely not George. So, I mean, if this summary is saying it's his brother, that makes sense, because if it's a connection to TOS, that's more, I think, direct than anything from a Kelvin movie.
Well, I mean, the Kelvin movies are not supposedly the same timeline, are they?
No, exactly.
Right.
But yeah, there would be definite similarities. So I just assumed that was, you know, the same name of a character.
Right. Who is this Control that they keep talking about?
Okay, so that's from Discovery. So Control was in season 2 of Discovery. Section 31 is heavily mentioned and heavily involved in season 2. And so the computer system for Section 31 is called Control. And so Control is an artificial intelligence that wants to become sentient, basically. And so that's basically what season 2 is about, is preventing that from happening, because they've seen this vision that if that does happen, then Control will eventually wipe out all known life, all known life basically in the universe.
So basically the same plot as Picard season 1.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just different names. Yeah, pretty much.
All right, well, I guess we kind of reached the end of the episode. I guess just to sum up, I think, not being a huge TOS fan, I don't feel maybe as excited as some do with this show. But I will say that it is the first new Star Trek we've gotten since, I guess, Enterprise went off air, that gives me that real Star Trek feel. Discovery had some elements, Picard would throw in some elements here or there, but neither one of those shows really felt like true Star Trek to me. This show definitely, I think, fits the bill. And just for that reason, I enjoyed watching it. It's good to have that back. It's good to have some episodic feel to it as well. I like having the story wrap up at the end of the episode. I'm not a huge fan of the serialized television. I know most people are. I'm just not one of those people that likes it. I like having that nice little neat bow on the end of the episode so I can stop thinking about it and go do something else, you know? I don't like having to be kept in suspense, you know, from episode to episode. It is going to obviously do more of the DS9 thing, where we're going to have those story arcs throughout the season with these characters, but the plot of each episode is going to wrap up. So I like that combination best, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that too, because I would think that's where fail is going to be too strong a word, but I can't think of another one. But that's where, like, the original series failed, where TNG failed a little bit. And I'll say, Aaron, don't hate me, but this is where I thought Voyager failed as well. I liked Voyager, but its failure was in the character stories of it wasn't with original series and Next Generation, that especially the original series, because it was like one episode didn't affect the next on what the characters had just gone through.
Yeah.
And so I think I will applaud, you know, Akiva and the showrunners for making that choice of, well, we just came off of season 2 of Discovery, where Pike just had this super traumatic experience. We can't have him just be, I'm here, let's move on, like it never happened. So it's to have, like, because no one does that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you never just throw off these experiences the next day to move on and do whatever is required of you that day. Like, what happened to you before affects, you know, what happens today affects tomorrow. And so I like that they've made this deliberate choice of, we're going to continue character development, but we're going to end the story of what these characters are going through in this episode. We're going to, you know, wrap up the day, or, but not not have to, where you have to watch 1, 2, 3 to understand 4.
Yeah.
So I do like that was a choice made, for this. And I mean, I'm one of the people that loves serialized television. So, but I like having that as an option for this.
Yeah, I agree. That's the one thing that drove me nuts on TNG, especially, because I just wanted Riker and Troy to like get married, you know, that's all I wanted on that show. And they would have these weird, like, on like one episode they're dating, and the next episode is like they nothing happened, you know. And so it was super frustrating. And I mean, TNG did some,
but yeah,
harkening back to previous episodes, but not a lot. And that is where that show fails, for sure. And I wish that they had done more of DS9 type stuff with it, but.
It's still
a good show.
It is like you get a spectrum of that being introduced, although it is weird that you kind of have the step backwards with Voyager, which you would think would be the series that would carry through that way because of their situation. And they do for the most part, but there are definite episodes that you could plunk it at any season as long as you make sure the characters look right.
Yeah.
And they would fit.
It was
one of those,
like, when they didn't, it was bad. Like,
yeah.
In fact, I think I vaguely remember like having that discussion with Sarah when Voyager was on, that's what I didn't like about Voyager is like, it's not consistent on what's happened to these characters already. And keeping that in mind and in line with what was going on. Now, I will freely admit that I may not feel that way or as harshly as I did back when the show was first, when it was airing. Because it's been enough time. I've been separated from watching it. So it's one thing I like about this podcast is actually going back and revisiting all of these shows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The feeling is totally different now. I mean, the poor DS9 got so much flack when it first came on.
Yeah.
Voyager did too. And and Enterprise.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was just trekked out by the time Enterprise came on.
That poor show.
Now, I will say, like, now, which is why it's so, a little surprising, because there are five Star Trek shows in production right now.
Yeah.
And there's going to be more.
Yeah, so it's more like I want to go, as someone who grew up watching, you know, having Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise, and TNG for a little bit, to have, you know, we had 2 to 3 shows airing or in production, that I want to go, wait, don't burn everybody out on this.
Well, the difference is you have way fewer episodes per season now.
That's true.
So it's not as much of a burnout, and they're being aired at different times as well. So they're kind of staggering in them so that, you know, when one show ends, you got another one to go into. So it's not quite exactly the same situation, but you have a point. They need to be careful not to overdo it.
But like with Strange New Worlds, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in this show. Like for me, like this of the new shows that are out now, like this one has the most potential to become my favorite of the shows that are out now, simply because I like the style of this and the flow of this. And I liked how this first episode unfolded. And I like what they're saying that is going to potentially happen.
That's kind of the great thing about the way they've kind of put out these different shows, is there is something out there for the people with different preferences in their viewing.
Yep.
And I like that. And I also think that another thing that is kind of helping the fact that we have so many Star Trek shows out or in production right now is the fact that we've become so used to binging things.
Yes. Yep.
It's changed the way we watch shows.
Yep.
And we it's almost changed the way our brains kind of process the shows. We're so used to, I'm going to sit down and just saturate myself in this rather than, okay, I'm going to sit down because it's Star Trek time and watch the episode. Or, you know, I recorded this week's episode. I'm going to sit down and watch this one episode.
Yeah.
And so those things all together, I think, are really driving the fact that this seems to be working right now. Because I was like you, by the time Poor Enterprise came around, I wasn't even interested.
Yeah.
And I didn't even give it a shot when it first came out. I'm enjoying it now. And, you know, I see that a good show just was in a bad situation. And it just came at the wrong time. Hopefully that doesn't happen with current Star Trek. Hopefully there's enough variety out there that people who want to watch all of it will watch all of it and enjoy it. I'm really looking forward to Strange New Worlds and have been enjoying Prodigy. So the fact that you can pick and choose what suits you at the time is kind of nice and an interesting take on having this whole franchise kind of spread out like that.
Except for when they overlap with Discovery and you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that did make it a little hard. But like I say, they did do, I think, a decent job in this episode of sprinkling that in there. And we probably will get more exposition on that as we go along.
Yeah, I'm sure.
All right. So the last episode that we put out was the episode covering Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. And so we did have a quiz in that, which means we had a listener quiz question go out on our social media pages. And the question that we had was, when Kirk goes to the pawn shop to sell his glasses to get money, how much did he get for his glasses? And quite a few people got that question correct. Obviously paying attention in the movie, and it was $100, which, of course, Kirk had to ask, is that a lot?
Not anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for real. That'll buy you a tank of gas now.
Yeah. So we had quite a few get that correct. We had on Instagram, we had Kevin H. I just want to dance an effing jig, Notting Hill Nerd, and Mike Lavoie. And then on Twitter, we had Beard answered that correctly. And on Facebook, we had my brother Mark. So congratulations to you guys getting that correct. Now, because we're not doing a quiz for the Strange New Worlds episodes, there won't be a listener quiz question after this one. But we will have another one when we do our next episode. So we'll be reading those out as we get questions answered. So those are actually going to be posted on our social media pages. And if you're not already following us, you can find us on Twitter, where we are at Tribbles Podcast. On Instagram, we are just Tribbles and Transporters Podcast. And then we do have a Facebook group and page. If you ever want to get in contact with us directly, we do have an email address, which is tribblesandtransporters@gmail.com.
And honestly, if you guys are watching Strange New Worlds, let us know what you think of the show. We would love to get your feedback and what you think about this brand new series that's going on.
Yeah, and we could even discuss some of your comments, too.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Yeah, so let us know. All right, so piggybacking on Strange New Worlds, it's very appropriate that we go to the original series. We're going to be talking about The Enemy Within. In our next podcast episode, we hope you guys will join us for that. And thanks for listening, as always. Hope you guys come back with us and go on this new journey through these strange new worlds. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
So I'm watching a lot of that stuff for the first time while we go through it in the podcast here. And is that it? I was trying to think, is there anything else I'm supposed to say I watched or not?
This has got to be in the bloopers at the end.
Who am I? What am I doing?
My brain is just not together tonight. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, seriously, is that it?
I think so. Like, it's really just whatever you want.
Yeah.
To
however you want to end that. Intro. Yeah.
Okay, I gotta come off the ending now.
Well, I mean, you can leave it as it is and see.
I don't remember how I left
it. How to edit that later.
I don't remember how I left it. I feel like I just stopped mid sentence.
you ended it with, is that it?
Yeah. You want to try again? Give yourself another take?
Well, I don't need to do the whole thing again. I just need to. I'll screw it. Just go, Megan.
Well, you can always record something else later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. My brain is just not working right now.
I cannot wait for this episode to be published to see what you include of the bloopers at the end of this. Oh, dear. I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. Oh, man. Hang on,
I was going to say, Megan's broken.
Where I'm not going to laugh and trying to do my thing. Okay.